Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. We are an associate of TCPN. You can find us over at www.thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. Good evening. My name is Ruth Anna Marte Fio, and this is Feed Your Head. Before we get started tonight with our guest from Revolutionary Tendencies Party, Stephen Argue, I want to give a big shout out to Tim King, who is editor of the Salem News at salem-news.org. Tim's on a road trip right now speaking of issues that veterans are having, from PTSD to benzene, Agent Orange, on and off. And to find out more about that, you go to Operation Red Dragonfly right on Facebook. So, good evening, Stephen.
Good evening.
Good evening. You've got your coffee. I know you're a coffee drinker as I am, so it's all good.
Yeah, I just brewed a little bit up, right?
I've been drinking a lot of cold brewed coffee this summer. I finally figured out how to make it. I mean, really good. So it is wonderful. But tonight we're talking about the Revolutionary Tendencies Party. And before we go too much into that, I just want to know how you got involved in politics. Has this been a lifelong thing, or has it been the last decade? What got you so involved?
I got involved pretty early on. My father was in Vietnam early on and advised me on a number of things about how the U.S. was wrong about Vietnam. When I was about 14, there was a discussion in a classroom where a Democrat and Republican was brought into my high school to debate, and there was a member of the Communist Party there who her father was a member of the Communist Party, who complained that there were no third parties. So they brought in someone from a third party, and the person from the third party came in. It was from the Socialist Workers Party, and this person had all these things to say about what was going on in Nicaragua at that time and how the U.S. was supporting the racist government of South Africa. And it really struck home with me, as well as talking about the meatpacker strike. My grandfather was a meatpacker. There was the Hormel meatpacker strike going on at the time. So all these things came together when I heard this independent voice. Right. Later, it turned out that they were wrong about a lot of things, but just hearing someone who had something that was, you know, a lot of correct ideas and saying things like, in Nicaragua, the U.S. is wrong. In fact, the U.S. is on the wrong side. The Sandinistas are the good guys. And I already knew that, and I was so surprised to hear a voice saying that. Really got me involved, and soon after that, I actually went to Nicaragua, and I was down there, and in that process, I saw what the U.S. was doing. The U.S. was committing mass murder against a people who had overthrown a U.S. imposed dictatorship, and giving these horrible Contras, these mercenaries, all these weapons and guns, and they were coming in and they were murdering children and just horrific. And understanding at that early age what the U.S. was up to, I just it became a lifelong endeavor getting rid of the system.
Right. Well, now you said that your father had already told you about Vietnam being wrong and all, but when you heard this person say that the U.S. was wrong to be in Nicaragua, you said you already knew that because you had just figured it out, or you'd been following the news or reading between the lines.
I had studied it, actually. I had read books about it and wrote a report for one of my classes. So it was like, you know, I hadn't been in touch with radicals about what it was all about, but at that point, I was just I sort of was. I guess there were like this was an inner city school, so there were this girl who complained about just having a Democrat and Republican debating. So that was part of the situation there. But I had studied it. I wrote a report, and so I had some idea that the U.S. set up the Somoza dictatorship in the 1930s. Roosevelt, of all people, helped set up the Somoza dictatorship and the dynasty there. And so I guess it was a combination of things, you know. And growing up in Minneapolis, where the Teamsters had led the Minneapolis Teamster strike of 1934, the Trotskyists had. And that... I don't know. All these things come into play. It's like, you're a young mind. I didn't grow up in the South, so I grew up around a lot of ideas that helped me move forward.
Yeah. Well, so you were the first official party that you joined, or did you join a party?
Yeah,
official?
So I joined the Socialist Workers Party. Was involved in St. Paul, Minneapolis and St. Paul, with the Socialist Workers Party. I organized things. I organized students from my high school to go to the Hormel strike. I toured the parts of the country talking about the war in Nicaragua after having gone there. I had a slideshow. And speaking out against that war, and was involved in building that party. I got elected to the national leadership of the youth group of the party, and became a member of the Socialist Workers Party. But over time, I realized they were wrong, and they were abandoning. They were wrong in abandoning a lot of the basic principles that had started the Socialist Workers Party back in 1929 when they started out, when they split from the Communist Party, over Stalin's abuses, over basic principles of Marxism. What they were beginning to do was adopt more of those ideas again. They were supporting the ANC in South Africa, even though the ANC in South Africa was not putting forward the kind of program that would really liberate the people of South Africa. It was the type of program that Stalin had put forward, where Stalin had abandoned this idea that you need to overthrow capitalism in order to emancipate the working class. What they were starting to put forward were all these intermediate ideas of, okay, in South Africa, let's support this idea where if you have something like the ANC take power, that gets rid of the racism, and that's a step towards socialism. But the problem with that was you put the ANC in power without a program of getting rid of capitalism. You have what wound up happening is you have now a capitalist party in power, the ANC, which now guns down people just like any capitalist party does, and especially in poor countries, on behalf of the wealthy corporations that are exploiting the workers in the mines and so forth. So, you know, we've had that happen. There's like these horrible massacres that have happened to mine workers under the ANC government, police under their control. It's a capitalist government. It remains the same kind of exploitation. And I recognized that early on in the early 90s that this isn't going to work. You have to either overthrow capitalism or you're going to a party that takes power that doesn't have a program to overthrow the capitalist system is going to become the overseers of that same exploitative system. And when I started suggesting that, then I was driven out of the party pretty quickly.
Okay. Well, that's what I feel that this last election, when we have all these people talking about the less of the two evils, as far as they weren't talking about overthrowing capitalism or making any waves that way.
Right.
In fact, the American Communist Party or Communist Party US, I think it's called the American Communist Party, actually supported Obama and made no bones about it, which
Yes, they did, and Stalin came up with that, actually. That's part of this whole abandoning of Marxism that Stalin did. Stalin, and that's why the Socialist Workers' Party was so important when it was established. It was first established as the Communist League of America in 1939. It was a split from the Communist Party because Stalin, I mean, besides all of the horrible things he did in overthrowing many of the good things that happened in the Russian Revolution, he also had this international program that was against the working class taking power. It was called the theory of socialism in one country. And under that banner, he sabotaged revolutions in every country in the world in order to get trade with those countries. So in the United States, part of that was supporting the Democratic Party or the Democrat Party, as opposed to fighting on an independent program. So in 1935, Stalin put forward this program where the Communist Party started supporting the Democrat Party, and they've been doing it ever since as the supposed lesser of two evils. And they've gotten even worse. I mean, back in 1935, at least they were leading strikes and they had a lot of good ideas still. They hadn't abandoned it, but now they're just kind of a sad,
yeah,
liberal party.
That was really astonishing to me. I didn't believe it really at first, but so then after you were after you left the Socialist Workers Party, what did you do? You were part of the Socialist Party USA for a while, I believe.
I was. That came later as partly as an idea of trying to get something going. You know, it was like I was advocating ideas, but just advocating ideas alone is not it's not enough. You know, you need the party's essential. You need more people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea in joining the Socialist Party was in the fact that the Socialist Party leadership put forward this idea that we're a multi-tenancy party. So I took them up on their word of that, and I joined. Because I also noticed that there were some more radical people who were part of it, more radical than the leadership. So I thought, you know, I could orient to this left wing in the party and at least put in my two cents and try to get something going. And because what I see with a lot of what's going on with the different parties in the United States is they're just off track on so many different questions. So I did that. And what turned out, though, is the leadership of the party was completely hostile when there was a tendency, the revolutionary tendency formed within the Socialist Party. They were so hostile to us. They were in Maryland. They kept our members from being able to get membership lists to even organize events that were building the Socialist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came to realize that, and they were so hostile anyway in so many other ways. It's like, there's no way that this is the way to move forward. You can't recruit people to a party that's hostile to your tenancy. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I came to the realization that it, even in some ways, it may have been a mistake to even be a part of them, to even give them any credibility. But the mm-hmm. idea was to try to work with other people who had maybe had some similar ideas of socialism, and getting those ideas out together and working together, maybe in a multi-tenancy party, as the Socialist Party had promised their party to be. Well, it turned out that's not really what they're doing. They're lying about that. They're very strict about having these very liberal reformist ideas in control of their party, which include the idea of you can just be elected eventually in the United States to the highest offices and then bring about socialism that way. And they have no concept of the fact that the people in power, they're going to do everything, absolutely everything, to keep you from doing that. And once you do get elected, they have control of the military, the police, and everything else. And most likely, unless you're prepared for it, they're going to kill you. They're going to kill you if you do get elected. I mean, it's not like we live in a democracy. The very wealthy and very powerful, that's who gets elected.
Yeah.
And
definitely, beyond a doubt. That's, I do want to say...
Yeah, I mean, just look at the money involved in the elections. And
I just want to say, we'll take calls in the last 15 minutes of the show. So we've had a couple people who wanted to talk. But let's wait till then. So, caller, please hold on. Go ahead, Stephen. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no need to be sorry. So it's this whole idea. I mean, you look at Allende in Chile. That's the ultimate example of people who thought, Allende thought he could get elected and just transform Chile. Well...
Mm-hmm.
What did they do? They killed him. They went, and then they went after everybody who supported him too. They rounded them up, they tortured them, they killed them too. What it takes is understanding that we're up against a system that really, you know, we need to organize on a level where we're not thinking that there is democracy in America. There is no democracy. Bourgeois democracy is democracy of the wealthy. The wealthy rule. So we need to think about ways we can fight back to begin with, which includes labor fight backs, stuff like what the Teamsters did. And this was something I learned earlier on, knowing someone who was part of the early Socialist Workers Party group in Minneapolis, Mr. Cooper. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his first name. But he was active in the Teamsters, and he was one of the people who made who was part of the Trotskyist movement as well. And the Trotskyist movement was moved into a situation in 1934, along with other socialists, where the leadership of the trade unions were incapable of leading. They were incapable of, it's just like today, they were incapable of doing anything effective. And at that time, socialists took the leadership of some important struggles, the Teamsters in Minneapolis, the longshoremen in San Francisco, and the auto light workers in Toledo. And these workers stood up at that time And that was the beginning of this upsurge. It wasn't dependent on looking towards the Democrats or anything like that. It was workers actually fighting and shutting down production and winning what they needed. And they were doing it, they were ignoring court injunctions and all of those things that today it's like supposedly we are so bound and we can't fight because of all of these injunctions and the courts and the cops and all of these things of the capitalist government. Well, we should expect these things from the capitalist government. That's what they do. They're there to defend the corporations.
Exactly. And corporations are there to make a profit, not to help any of us.
Right.
So,
and the government is owned by them, and it's their property,
yeah,
along with the corporation. You know, so it's like, so what happened was, is the unions became this powerful force that stepped into the struggle because of socialist leadership in the 1930s, and it actually transformed the country, this country, in a lot of ways. And from that, we moved forward, and we won things like Social Security and other major gains. But at this point in history, the capitalist class is not willing to give us those kind of concessions unless we're able to fight for them.
Yes.
And it takes that kind of union.
So, well, what happened? How did we lose such the gains? You know, because now I think we're down to something like 7% of the workforce, maybe in unions, only 7%. I mean,
here's how we lost it.
Yes.
We for one thing, we don't have the kind of revolutionary socialist leadership in the unions that won it in the first place. We have leaderships in the unions that look to the Democratic Party and who lie to the membership, who sell out the membership, partly because they get, you know, they get benefits from it. I mean, it's like,
they're
a bureaucracy and they live off of being bureaucrats, not off of winning anything for workers. In some ways, the existence of the unions do benefit workers. You're always better off with a union than without. But these leaderships, this is what existed before 1934 too. The Gompers leadership, these people, what they were doing were selling out the workers in the same way, and workers couldn't win. They couldn't win a fight. They couldn't win a fight until socialists took the leadership of some major fightbacks. They became major fightbacks because socialists took the leadership. And that's what happened with the Trotskyist leadership in Minneapolis, the Communist Party leadership in San Francisco, and the Workers' Party leadership in Toledo at that time. What they did is they didn't believe in these ideas of, okay, we have to give in to government injunctions. No, they organized. They even organized. They were so organized, they organized hospitals knowing there would be casualties and not to have their members go to the regular hospitals. They had nurse volunteers so that they'd be ready to fight the cops, fight the vigilantes, fight these people in the streets. That's what it took to win a strong union movement. And that was the beginning of it.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's wonderful. I didn't. So now, with the Revolutionary Tendencies Party, now, like you said, this was part of, you had this way on the left side of the Socialist Party USA, where everything you did was met with negative responses. So you're no longer part of the Socialist Party USA.
Right, no. So the Revolutionary Tendency is a new organization. We're very small. Our strength is more in our ideas, actually. And basically, yeah, I mean, the Socialist Party, they do their thing. They're not very relevant. I mean, they run candidates. They advocate whatever they advocate. I think it was a mistake to even be involved with them. Actually, they're more like they don't even participate in things like union struggles. They don't have the memory. I mean, if they even went on their own legacy, one of the founders of the Socialist Party, Eugene Debs, his understanding of socialism, a lot of it came from the fact that he organized rail workers, and these rail workers were slaughtered by the U.S. government that he had organized, and he realized out of that there was no way forward unless the American working class organized a revolutionary socialist party. So that's what Eugene Debs organized. And Eugene Debs was under constant attack. Even when he didn't quite go the right direction on certain questions, he was still opposed to U.S. involvement in the First World War. And he was thrown in prison for that. And got close to 1 million votes.
But that's what's impressive about that is there were not 310 million people in the United States at that time either, like there is now.
Right.
I mean, it was a lot less. And for somebody in prison to get 1 million votes, close to 1 million, I mean, this is impressive.
This was a major movement. And that's part of why there was major repression going on at the time. That's why Eugene Debs was in prison. That's why they were deporting huge numbers of anarchists and communists. And the Communist Party was pushed underground right after it was established, when it was inspired by the Russian Revolution that happened in 1917. It wasn't even an illegal underground party. And actually, it was a few different factions underground that united after they came above ground after 1920. But the repression that went on was horrible, and some of the people who were involved in it, they continued on. The FBI, you had similar repression going on against the Black Panther Party. Decades later, repression against the working class that continues on, and there's still, you know, like the NSA and all of these, and the political prisoners we have right now, Mumia Abu-Jamal, the way they're going after Snowden just for telling the truth, the way they're going after, the fact that they still have Leonard Peltier in prison.
I know. And the lady's name, what's her name who's in Cuba?
Asada Shakur. Yeah. She's been driven into exile. You know, this is an atrocity, but Cuba has given her political exile. And this is a woman who was involved in the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party, the U.S. government went after them. Murdered 39 members, and framed up many more members.
That was the whole thing. They were framed. I did want to mention back when you were talking about the Socialist Party USA now not being involved in unions, and I totally agree with you. However, that doesn't mean that some of the individual members aren't, because
Of course, yeah.
No, I mean, so some of the members.
But they don't have a good program, and it's not based on things like. The books like by Farrell Dobbs about Teamster Rebellion, you know, and the strategies that were used there, or the Big Strike, you know, Teamster's Rebellion. That's the strategies of the Trotskyists, or the Big Strike, which was the strategies of the Communist Party. These are fundamental ideas that. You know, what it takes to win, for the working class to win. They believe in a lot of pacifist ideology, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
They believe you can somehow appeal to, I mean, a lot of them believe in Martin Luther King's ideas, where you can appeal to the conscience of your oppressors somehow, which is not what succeeded anyway. I mean, that's like
that's
to believe that.
People mention Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and their pacifist movement and all this, and this is fine. Neither of them, as far as I know, ever picked up anything or slugged it out with somebody. However, to get what they got, their followers did. You know, there were a lot of fights. A lot of people were killed. I mean, so while, you know, you can say it was...
And there were a lot of non-followers, too, that actually were the ones who accomplished it.
Yeah, yes. So it wasn't, wasn't all that peaceful. It's like a nice idea, well, we'll just do this and nobody's going to get hurt. But people do get hurt. And the sooner people actually recognize that, the better, I think.
Yeah.
But that's...
Yeah, Martin Luther King even had armed people defending him as much as he wants to.
He had
And, you know, he appealed... He appealed to Johnson, to LBJ, to get troops down into the South when people in the civil rights movement were getting slaughtered, were getting massacred by the KKK in alliance with the local police and the Democratic Party. And LBJ didn't move on that. Malcolm X stepped in and he said, okay, well, we're willing to send some people down, and they'll train black people to defend themselves militarily and to fight back. And Martin Luther King said that's morally reprehensible. But there was a movement that, and Malcolm, you don't hear much about it, but Malcolm X did go into the South, and he spoke in these terms. And the leadership of the civil rights movement tried to prevent him from speaking at events, but audiences demanded he be allowed to speak. And this was part of organizing a movement that eventually did become armed in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't only after blacks became armed in the South that troops were sent in, because then the federal government became afraid. They became afraid of the blacks doing it themselves. So, you know, the whole, you know, I mean, there were decades. There was a whole decade there of the civil rights movement doing. I mean, Martin Luther King did some beautiful things in terms of his. I mean, he was a very brave human being, and the way he stood up and a brilliant orator, but. He was also someone who gave way too much support for the Democratic Party, for Johnson, for these people. He kept silent when the U.S. was slaughtering people in Vietnam. He was silent about the fact that the very system that this very system is committing these things. He had this idea that you could appeal to people's morality and power. You can't. And Malcolm X knew better. Malcolm X understood power recognizes power. And Malcolm X was wrong on some other things, but Malcolm X played more of a role in actually defeating Jim Crow than most historian or most bourgeois historians today will give him credit for, because he was the voice saying, no, we're not going to just put up with this, and we're not going to stand beside as they come and kill us or beat us or lynch us and all these things. We're going to go back at them in the same way they come at us. And the more he got organized to do that, the more the U.S. government was forced to act. There wasn't any change in consciousness. They became afraid. They became afraid of the black population of the South. They also became afraid of how this made America look internationally, as Malcolm X spoke out against
Like, they don't care about that anymore. You mean, yeah, that was back when the government cared how they were perceived elsewhere? Now they don't care.
Well, they probably didn't care that much then anyway.
Okay.
I mean, they were murdering 3 million people in Vietnam. But, you know, they were trying to claim that they were representing democracy.
Right.
So it may have mattered a little bit. But, you know, when there's no democracy in America, it's like, it gets a little harder.
Well, it's not a democracy, right? It's ruled by the...
Yeah. But the main thing was they became afraid that people were going to start shooting back in the South, and they had gotten organized to do it. And, you know, it's like Malcolm X is not given the credit that he deserves because he said this is complete idiocy. When a man comes to your door speaking Chinese, you don't speak to him in some other language. They come to your door speaking in the language of violence. They're not going to understand when you speak to them in the language of nonviolence.
And some people are so far in denial that appealing to their conscience is just futile. And I mean, I hate to say that, but
right. And that's the people who rule America. It's not even based on people so much as a system. It's a system based on profit. And, you know, I mean, even if you have a conscience, if you're a capitalist or running a company, if you have a conscience, you're not going to make that much money. And you're going to be pushed aside by the ones that are more... more evil, you know. I mean, it's a system.
Maybe you're trying to hire people for a living wage and get your materials here, or even if you've gone offshore to get materials, you're trying to pay a living wage to people in some other country. Well, you're just going to go out of business, let's face it, because you've got all this competition that is paying $2 a day to somebody in some other country, and you're trying to give them like $10 a day. Well, guess what? It's not going to work. I wanted to ask, why don't you tell, I've got it down here, but it's sort of long. Give your website.
Well, Liberation News is the site where I send out articles from. And I have to look that up, I'm sorry.
I've got the list .riseup.net.
Yeah, it's I think, but if you put a internet search on that, although the PSL, after they split from the Workers' World Party, they stole my name of Liberation News, so that comes up. But let's see.
You are on Facebook, Stephen with the V, Argue. And you think a lot, and you're a prolific writer, and you write you send your writings to a lot of groups online.
Right. Yeah. I've always believed in getting the word out, and getting the word out to, you know, even people who may just only partially get it or whatever, you know. So I like passing stuff out. I've been arrested a number of times for distributing literature, actually. So it's like the development of the internet is like, oh, okay, they're not arresting me for this. Although, it seems like they've tried to shut me down, but not in a serious way. So. But things like I actually won a $20,000 lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz for the fact that they arrested me here for distributing some of my literature.
Oh.
And
was it because
it was a violation of
distributing it?
What's
or,
that?
I mean, were you close to a vote? I mean, was it the location? Was that what they got you for? Or
No. They had nothing. It was just stupidity. They were trying to shut me down. I had just written an article about how the Santa Cruz police had murdered a homeless activist.
Oh.
in cold blood, and we're getting away with it. And the day before the police attacked me, supposedly for distributing literature about that, there was a rally of 100 people in Santa Cruz, which actually we got two newly elected city council people to be part of that too, and we were on the second page of the local newspaper. And this cop, his name was Officer Garner. I could see him coming down the street as I was selling newspapers on the street. I'd often hawk newspapers on the street, and this cop, and it included my article about how the police had murdered this guy.
Gosh.
And this cop came up to me and he says to me, "Do you have a license?"
Oh.
And I said, "I don't need a license. This is a constitutional right. Besides, there are no licenses for anyway." But you know, so he's like, "Well, you have to stop." I said, "No, I'm not going to stop." And he called for backup, and these cops, other cops came, and they beat me up right on the street, and they brought me to jail. I spent 4 days in jail. And I got beat up again in jail.
Why? Because you're a commie or something, or what?
Well, yeah, and also because I was standing. Well, mainly because at that point with them, with the local city government in Santa Cruz, I was standing up to their repressive nature, and they're pretending to be these liberal Democrats, which they're Democrats, yeah, and they're I guess they're liberal. They're certainly not socialists.
Although one of
them was even claiming, the mayor was claiming to be a socialist. So in exposing how evil they were, they sent the cops out after me, just like any other city would, and they put me in jail but I was able to win the lawsuit partly because of the way they argued. They tried to argue in court that I was making money off of distributing my literature.
Oh.
And the judge ruled, "Well, you don't understand the First Amendment, because that has nothing to do with whether or not he's making money." The freedom of press should not be hindered in any way, you know, according to the First Amendment. So,
anybody,
so I won that, and then, what's that?
That was great. I was just going to say, almost everybody who's doing any of this kind of work is not getting rich off of it, let's face it.
Right.
So that was just absurd anyway. But,
right, of course, yeah. I mean, even if I was, but I wasn't, you know.
Right, but I mean, so if you were, good for you.
So the judge is like, "This is ridiculous." And he says, even by the way you're organizing it, or even by the way you're arguing it, it proves that you don't, that you are violating the First Amendment, that you're arguing it this way. So that was good. You know, it was a precedent.
You have a judge who actually had some sense. It happens. Somebody said, "Okay, Stephen, the Revolutionary Tendency Party, give us, what is it? Is it socialist, communist? What is it?"
Socialism and communism really aren't different things, in my opinion, although they've become differentiated due to
some of the
history that's gone on since Marx. But Marx never differentiated. I don't really differentiate. I consider myself both a socialist and a communist.
Well, now, am I wrong or right? When, to me, it seems like communism is, I don't know which one would be like the umbrella and the other might be under. Like, some people say socialism is the transition stage to communism.
In terms of the development of socialism and communism, yeah, there's a differentiation there, but there's no differentiation between what a socialist and a communist is.
Okay.
Or what one should be. But the problem is a lot of what has been identified as socialist has become identified with the parties that are actually part of the betrayal of the Second International, and a lot of what's identified as communist are really what were the betrayals of the Third International in people's minds. But these are betrayals of what those organizations were established for. So the Second International, which people see as socialist right now, or a lot of people do, really abandoned socialism a long time ago. They became capitalist parties. They did when they started administrating capitalist states without a program for the overthrow of capitalism. And so in order to maintain that position, you become, in this sort of capitalist society, in order to become a viable party in a capitalist, under a capitalist state, you have to accept money from capitalists and do their bidding. And that's what they started doing. Sure. And that's what they did when the First World War started. The majority of them in the German parliament and across Europe, they voted for war with each other, based on supporting their own capitalist class against the other, and setting working class people against each other to kill each other in a war that had no interest for anybody except for the capitalist classes who wanted more imperialist power in the world.
Right. Well, that's why they always support both sides, so they make sure they get that money. But we do have a caller from 702, and you've been patiently waiting. Did you have a comment or a question for Stephen?
Not so much. I'm actually his Facebook friend, in fact. I'm Dax. I'm Nick Dax, by the way.
Hello.
But I finally talked to y'all. I'm actually outside now, so you may hear a lot of background noise and things like that. But,
okay.
Yeah. Now that the revolutionary tendency is its own political party, per se, what is the long-term, I'd say, project of the revolutionary tendency? Is it going to work within Occupy, for example? Because I'm a real hardcore Occupy Wall Street person.
Okay. I think the primary task is building a party and building it on a program that can really challenge the Democrats and Republicans in power, that's really based on tactics that have worked in the union struggles, tactics that have worked in fighting against imperialist wars, and based on that, what has worked in the past has partly been having a revolutionary party playing a big role in the leadership, and also having very concrete demands. And not having concrete demands, I think, has been a major problem with Occupy. Occupy has done some good things, and I'm not going to say that it's a bad thing, but I don't think it's paving the way forward. We need more of a program for, not just for unity. I mean, Occupy has a program for unity. Everybody can come together and they can believe whatever they want. But we need to fight more on a program, I think, in order to actually take down the system. Locally here in Santa Cruz, the Occupy program even opposes or even has a program of nonviolence, where supposedly we're not supposed to fight back in any situation against the system. It's philosophical nonviolence, and I don't agree with that. I think the labor movement became strong by fighting back in very militant ways. I think usually it's a tactical question that it's a good idea not to fight in certain ways, but it's a tactical question. It's not a philosophical question. So, but the bigger question is the fact that they don't even, as a group, reject the Democrats, Republicans. There's all kinds of different ideas from Ron Paul to MoveOn.org that are very active. People preaching against the Illuminati. And I don't see any organization like this ever leading the revolution that we need in the United States. We need a much more concrete program. Although there have been aspects of the Occupy movement that have been very good in opposing police brutality and standing up against what's being done to the ILWU, and the ILWU standing up with the Occupy movement too, and going on strike and opposing the police repression that was carried out in Oakland against the Occupy movement.
I think what Occupy did was help empower people. So they start feeling that they may have some power after all.
Right.
And so right. I agree with what you're saying as far as, there's not an overall idea, maybe, but in different locations, different cities are taking things into hand, like whether it's the homeless or lunches, whatever. I mean, they're doing things. They've met people who have a passion now, and so things are getting done, but it's not a there's no big umbrella, this is what we're doing kind of thing. So I agree with you there, definitely.
Right. So it's something to certainly oppose right off the bat, the police repression going on against it. And to participate in as it's useful, you know, in terms of putting forward the kind of program. Because it is based on opposing corporate greed and these things. But I think fundamentally we need to also understand that opposing corporate greed really isn't going to do the trick, that we need to actually take these people out of power, and we need to oppose their power with power. And there are people in the Occupy movement that understand that, those who were involved in working with the longshoremen in Seattle or up in Washington, that was fundamental, you know, in helping, although the union leadership ultimately sold them out.
Larry Holmes of the Workers' World Party had said it, because I attended a kind of a left forum thing on this, that what Occupy needs is vertical organizing. He used those exact words. Do you think that's what really, is that what really Occupy needs?
I think that I can't specify what Occupy needs exactly, because Occupy, I don't feel, is exactly my movement. You know, it's like, I hate to say that, but the fact that it doesn't have a program, doesn't have specific demands, the fact that it can include everybody from every direction, it's a movement that I have sympathies with for what it exposes at times. Although I just saw something the other day where some of the Occupy people were putting out something against vaccines, you know. So,
I'm not aware of that.
I think, well, it was, I don't know how general it is. It was like from the Occupy website, I think in New York, or I don't know who put it out or something, but it was, you know, it was something supporting the anti-vaccine movement. And it's like, you know, I mean, there's a big mix of people involved in this thing, and you got to expect that because they don't have a specific program.
Right.
And they lack, so with that, they lack what's, you know, any program that's necessary to really change things. And at the same time, they also don't have specific demands. So, you know, it's like you look at like the anti-Vietnam War movement, where they said the main slogan was U.S. out of Vietnam now.
Yeah.
And they were able to organize a movement that was very specific, and people could come together on that, and they were about something specific. So participating in that made a lot of sense because you knew what you were about. But when you have like something so decentralized as the anarchist leadership of the Occupy movement have demanded, and without like any real specific demands, you have a lot of bad demands that come in, a lot of bad program that comes in, and you know, people who have all kinds of illusions in the system this way and that way. But at the same time, just the fact that they are exposing corporate greed to a large degree, the government is cracking down on them. So I think it's fundamental that we step in and say we oppose this repression, this brutal repression that was taking place in a country that's supposedly democratic.
Okay, we've only got a couple minutes left. I want to thank you for calling in, and
thank you for your patience,
because I know you waited quite a while. I want to say that you can also find Stephen on Facebook. It's Revolutionary Tendencies Party, and it says of the Socialist Party USA, I believe, because the title hasn't been changed.
They you can't change it on Facebook, so it's just it's that, but then I have a thing pinned to the top that says we're not part of the Socialist Party.
Yeah, I'm in the Facebook group myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
I'm on the Facebook group, and I'm his Facebook friend too. So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Feel free to friend me if you want.
Oh, sure.
So, we're gonna let's see. One more time, Stephen, give your contact information.
Okay, so the okay, let me get this. It's Liberation News. Liberation News is, it's HTTPS, I don't know, list.riseup.net, vvv/info/Liberation News. _news, and actually I didn't say HTTPS quite right. There's like, I don't know what you call that, when the two dots and then the two
That's a colon slash slash.
That's colon. I'm an educated person, but I don't know, there's something I missed.
www.info/liberation_news. Okay, and I will have that on the Air Marte field page also. So,
okay.
We'll get that up there. So thank you both very much. And Stephen, I hope you come back because a lot of info. And
okay, cool.
I like what you're doing because I think that people really are going to have to stand up for what they believe and do something.
Exactly.
So instead of just talking about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's We've been put in this denial stage for so long and told, well, we have no power. That's one of the things. We're just going to have to work on the power.
Right.
Empowering people, helping. So, I thank you. Have a great weekend, both of you.
All right,
thank you.
You
too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.